Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can support us on Anchor. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcasts. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. So this week, we watched The Pod Generation. Here is your synopsis. In the not-so-distant future, amid a society madly in love with technology, tech giant Pegasus offers couples the opportunity to share their pregnancies via detachable artificial wombs or pods. So begins Rachel and Alvy's wild ride to parenthood in this brave new world. This movie stars Emilia Clarke and Chiwetel Ejiofor, and it's directed by Sophia Bartz. So, Dale, thoughts?
First thought is I'm so glad you said his name because I would have butchered it. So I'm going to just call him Mr. Ejiofor by his last name the whole time.
Yeah,
I thought it was a very... It kind of wasn't like Her from Spike Jonze to the same degree, although it's kind of dealing with social interactions in a non-social future. I do feel like this probably is very not-so-distant future because it's like one company monopolizing everything. Reminds me very much of like how Amazon moves right now. But I do love, it's kind of a story of, I guess, nature and nurture in a way. Whereas it's the person who's kind of more technologically innovated or motivated was concerned about their detachment from their baby, especially being a mother. Like that's one of the key parts of being a mother that not postpartum, but that bond you have and her intimidation and not having that bond and then being dismayed that her husband is the one having that bond, which kind of usually flips the roles because you usually watch movies about people becoming expecting parents. Like it's the woman who's fully invested, who, you know, is the one with the emotional anchor, and the father is kind of the distant one out of the two. But yeah, I did love the movie. And it also was also an example, even if it's very futuristic as far as how they're having a baby, how their relationship and their dynamic kind of changes and ebbs and flows, which is something a lot of people don't realize when you're having kids. Like in real life, your relationship dynamics and your are going to change.
Yeah, I thought that this presented an interesting idea in that there could be a moment in our history or in our evolution, as they keep referring to it, where you don't have to sacrifice your body in order to have children. And, you know, I always find when sci-fi plays around with like procreating, this idea of like how important having children is something that I guess doesn't really land on me, because I'm like, I just feel like everyone's always getting pregnant and having babies. But like, not only this movie, but in a movie like Children of Men, where like there are no children, and how that literally like breaks society so much and like brings society to its knees because there aren't any more children being born. And I guess the statistics do show that there are less kids being born now than there were, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. So I see why it's a big deal. And I also like, not agree with the idea, but I also feel like if there was a scenario where like you didn't have to be pregnant and you can just get a baby, that sounds like a better option to me. You still have to raise a kid. So there's all of that. But like pregnancy is very dangerous. Like it happens every day, but women can die all the time from having children. And it's also incredibly expensive to have babies. Not just to raise them, but to literally just go to the hospital and have a child. It costs thousands of dollars. It's ridiculous. But yeah, so I can see like why this could be like a solution to that problem. However, it also raises a lot of other questions, because a company is doing this. You know, it's not like it's government mandated. It's like one company is choosing to have these pods. And that ends up being like an issue kind of down the line, where it's like, you can't, at a certain point, you have to bring your little pod back to the birthing center and until it's born. And that there's like a birthing code you need, and the company has that in order for your child to be born. And it's just like, it can go bad so easily. Like, and the children who are being born, I know they mentioned it kind of like infrequently that these kids don't dream. Like, they're basically like, if you had the embodiment of a test tube baby, like that's what it would be. Yeah. So yeah, lots of issues. Lots of ethical issues. I don't know. I think they did a good job of addressing like how this, an idea that sounds good and empowering to women, could easily be turned and be very destructive and bad for everyone involved. So
yeah. And this movie, I think, also covered in the children, like you mentioned, that none of the kids can dream. The pod babies can dream. And when they actually went to the elementary school, they were talking about, oh, the kids don't draw, the kids don't do anything, they tell AI what to do. And that also comes to a head. Like, this movie is, like, weirdly poignant and really relevant as far as what's going on, because that also reflects the stigma people have between, you know, STEM degrees and arts degrees. Like, I'm a big opponent, like, you need both to balance out. One can't outweigh the other. But now you have, like, you know, people like Musk and all these other guys like Zuckerberg who were just focused on science and stuff. And now when you see how, you know, these social media platforms are with, you know, a lot of the hate speech and neo-Nazi rhetoric and stuff like that, that kind of gets ignored. And actual interpersonal care, like a big component of our arts degrees is humanities. Like, you know, you had to take, I used to a sociology course, a psychology course. I did both. But, you know, you get to learn how, okay, this is how you interact with other people. Whereas most STEM degrees, you kind of don't, you're kind of insulated in your field and what you're dabbling only.
I think that there is an idea that, like, if you, that technology is the, like, best thing that's ever happened to us, and exploiting that to the fullest is what a lot of companies like this, which is, this could easily be like an Amazon or not Tesla. He doesn't own Tesla, but like an Elon Musk production. Let's just call it that. Like, it could easily be one of those things, because there's an idea of like, well, everything's for sale. And actually that is what this movie is in part about. And when I was watching interviews with the director, she was saying like, yeah, in America, nothing is valued. Like, everything is for sale. You can buy anything if there's a price on anything. But also that is the effects of late stage capitalism.
Yeah.
And we're to the point where it's like, yes, even your womb is for sale. Like, we can just replicate it. And you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to do any of it. And you can go back to work. You don't have to even deal with the idea of nausea or backaches or anything like that. Like, you can just live your life, and then your baby's there. And to me, again, you still have to raise the kid. So it's not, it actually isn't like a solution. Like, it's just like one step is made somewhat easier because like someone else is like taking care of the pregnancy. But I don't know. It feels like in today's age where the value of like technology is placed kind of above humanity, and you can really get away with anything in terms of like how far we can push that technology, and how having like humans involved in stuff can become irrelevant so quickly. And I think one of the characters, like the background characters, kind of threw that line out, but it's true. And we're seeing it like in the entertainment industry as it's happening, like we're seeing it in real time, like what that actually means. And I think I completely agree with what you said of like this movie just being incredibly poignant and relevant. Like, this is right on the, it's right on the, you know, the pulse of like what's happening.
It hits a little bit too close. And even beyond that, where I find that weird, that nature has now become a commodity to the point where they're talking there. You rent a nature pod if you want to relax, you know, where they're outside in like oxygen bar, they're going to oxygen bar, so breathing plants and stuff like that. But nature is a commodity. But when her boss is offering her, letting her know about a promotion, you know, wants to do the basic steps of what your husband does. When she says her husband's a botanist, the boss goes, oh, so he doesn't have a job. So I find that weird that this man is a botanist, you know, working with plants, bringing them back to life, nature and stuff like that. And nature is a commodity, but the person who is pushing nature is not valuable. That's also what I found interesting. And not just that, even at the school, they'd rather have holograms of his plants, and all the kids were like, I don't want to eat a plant. Plants are weird. And beyond that, like when they said they're having the child, how her father was pressuring him to sell his house on the island. And he was like, oh, people don't interact with nature anymore. But clearly that's not true, because we've shown through the movie that nature is a commodity. If you can afford it, you'll interact with it. Like one of her coworkers has like a backyard, you know. So I find it funny that the commodity is the object, not the person. Or the value is placed in the object, not the person who creates that object, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's just like where we are we're at, like in our society now. But I found it. What I liked about this movie is that they did show like how a relationship can change over time due to this one event, like of having a baby. So, because when I was watching it, because I was like, these people don't really seem like they like each other. Like they seem like they're cohabitating fine, but like in terms of like being in love, like I don't really feel that. It just kind of feels like they're out of sync. They're not really connected. It seems like their interests are also very different. How they want to raise their child is very different, like in those early stages. And so I was like, should we even be doing this? Like, it don't seem like y'all are good together. But like, as the film goes on, you kind of see them get back to, and I think Emilia Clarke was saying this too, where she was saying like, at the beginning of the relationship, they probably had a lot more in common. They were probably like dreamers and, you know, in step with like saving the environment and like being free. And as they progressed in their life and in their careers, they kind of diverged. But because this baby, it kind of brings them back together to where they originally were, because now they're back out in the country, you know, by the beach, planting, you know, getting the house ready for their kid. So like, I thought that was interesting, because a lot of times you kind of see what happens to a couple after a baby's arrived and things haven't gone well, or there's postpartum depression and having to deal with all of those things. But you don't really get to see the lead up of like what a baby could do, like can do to a couple in the lead up to it being born, and how much a relationship shifts and changes during that. And I thought both Emilia and Chiwetel did a great job.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Like I also loved, as the movie progresses, how she kind of, when she sees multiple women who are actually doing natural births, how her perspective changed. And it's also happening along with these dreams, because, you know, her body really knows she's pregnant, even though her body's not like, you know, the belly and everything. Like her body is giving her dreams, like, you're pregnant, you know, we're going to give you these dreams. I love how her opinion, like at first she's like, oh, the company says detachment, don't get involved. But as the birth gets further along and like, and she's having the dream, she develops more of an attachment on par with now I want to mess up his last name and I don't want to mess up Edgeford, and I did love that a lot. Like you said, it shows as through the pregnancy that their relationship was rebuilding and reforming, and they were back on an even keel.
Also, I liked the production design of this. Like, I liked the futuristic nature of how everything looked. But it didn't look so far off. Like, it kind of looked so futuristic that it didn't feel authentic. Like, it felt like, no, this is New York. It's just a little bit further in the future with some tweaks and beeps here and there. And I was like, okay, I liked how everything was presented and how everything is kind of white and sterile. That therapist, the AI therapist with the eye and the sound design of, you can hear it blinking as it's like processing what they're saying. thought that was great. Very off-putting. Oh my God. I couldn't even imagine going to a therapist. He was an AI. It's like, what's the point? Like how he feels in the beginning when he's like yelling at it. I was like, yes, I agree. Like
very much Will Smith and iRobot. Like I hate robots, you know.
I'm just thinking about that meme when the robot turns and it's like, no. Yeah. I don't know why. That's just like stuck in my head. Anyway. But yeah, I thought that was really done. And I like the angle that the director took where she kind of made it not a comedy, but there was a lot of humor embedded in it, which I thought was a good way to go about it. I still think it's very like obvious like what they're trying to say. Like it is kind of heavy handed and like these are the messages that we are sending to you guys. But I do like that they tried to have some levity in it because the situation is kind of absurd of like, okay, well, this pod is like growing a baby, which sounds, and the fact that like people who can't actually get pregnant would have rather do the, rather had the pod experience rather than actually carrying the child. And honestly, like I get that because again, 9 months, nine plus months out of your life. Yeah. I feel it, but still, it's still weird because it's like your baby is being like incubated, like it's being grown in a little thingy. And usually like when you do like IVF and stuff, like, yes, it's kind of, it's made in a lab, but not really. Like they're just like putting the sperm in the egg and then putting it back inside of you or inside of your surrogate, whoever, whatever you choose to do. So like, you are still growing the kid. And so it's weird that like that entire process is like
automated,
outsourced. Yes. Automated and outsourced. Like that's creepy.
I mean, and that's the thing, like, and I think her coworker, which every time I see her in her project, I instantly don't like her because she always played some kind of snidey people. I remember the first time I saw her, like Sherlock, and she instantaneously pissed me off. So every project I see that face and I go, I'm not gonna like her character. I never do. But when she was like, she was talking about women are valued as Madonnas when they give birth, but then after they give birth they're seen as nothing, like how the uterus and the vagina is the most politicized object in like the world. I was like, yes, I vibe with this 100%. But then the movie does like this weird thing with the whole pods and being born, where it kind of says like it's like right now how women's bodies are highly politicized and police, like you're going to give birth, you're going to do what you want to do whether you like it or not. It feels like in this version of future is that same rhetoric but flipped for a profit. Oh, it's your body, your autonomy, and we want you to pay us to help you keep your autonomy, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Basically, that's the same thing. Because again, it's like, it's not within your own control.
Yeah.
It's someone else. I mean, yeah, sure. Like, you can make the decision to do it. However, you still have to pay a lot of money. You still have to sign a contract. And if you're not reading the fine print, like this couple did, like, or didn't do, like, you don't know what they're actually asking of you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still out of your hands in a way. And I think that that was one of the interesting things that I found from this of like, is this really empowering? Because that's what the people keep saying, you know, the company and the head director of the birthing center. It's like, no, this is like giving women power. Like this is giving them the opportunity to further their careers and not have to miss out on anything. But I feel like, you know, yes, in a sense, it's like, okay, I don't have to suffer in order to like bring a child into the world. But I feel like if you're running a business where like you are just growing these babies and it's under your control and your jurisdiction, and these parents are just given like visiting rights to their own child, like I don't know how empowering that is. And especially when they were talking about, and they were talking about this in the interview, when they were talking about the fact that there are workplace incentives to keep women working. Yeah. Like they're like, oh well, you can freeze your eggs or whatever, and in this film they're like, oh, we'll help cover the down payment so that you can do this program. Yeah. And it's like, Thank you, but like, it's just, it's very strange that like, what is the most important thing is making money. Like that, making money is more important over anything, yeah. Even starting a family. So like,
even the babies, because remember, they were like, yeah, we're going to accelerate the, it was usually what, 27, 29 weeks. And yeah. Like, oh, we need the pod, so we're going to induce the birthing hormone, and your child will be up in 37 weeks. Like, because of the demand for these pods, we're going to mm-hmm. rush the process without proper regulation, as, you know, kids not having dreams and stuff like that, just so, mm-hmm. you know, we can make more money.
Right. And I feel like, you know, now, because of the reversal of like Roe versus Wade and stuff of that nature, where it's like, well, there are so many laws in place where you have to have children. It is kind of just basically the same rhetoric in the opposite direction, where it's like, well, no, like you don't have to do it, but if you want to, just pay us and we'll take care of it for you. I don't know. I'm not a mother, so I'm not sure what that feeling is like, actually carrying a child or preparing for a baby. But I can imagine like that's a very intimate process that like if you're choosing to do it, you really want to have it. So the fact that you can only have it at like a distance is weird and not empowering at all, because it's like other people are manipulating and trying to get you to make a certain choice. That seems like it's kind of out of your hands. Like, okay, I can go and have this baby, but that means I might miss out on work, which means that my career and my job can be in jeopardy. But if I do this program, like I can stay in work, but I can't even like carry my egg around, like my little pod around. Like I have to put it in a little closet. Like that's so like, what are you really trying to say here? Like basically you're saying, don't have kids really. And if you do, just use this company that we're kind of associated with so we can kind of get some benefits from it. It's like, it's so messed up.
Or the typical rhetoric that goes now, kids aren't valued until they provide some kind of resource. That's why you see a lot of states right now lowering what the legal age limit for children. You have like 15, 14 year old kids working. Like I think a couple weeks ago, like a kid died in a factory and stuff like that. Like we're only valued as a commodity. Like we're only letting you have birth so the human race can live on. But we don't want to see the egg. We don't want to see you miss out on work and drop your productivity 25%. We don't even want to see you caring for the egg. No, put the egg in a store. It basically, seen us sight unseen. Like we don't want to see it. We don't want to hear about it. That kind of thing. Which yeah. Mm-hmm. And they took it another level by having, I guess, like you made a point. The movie makes this point on the side it's on very harshly, doesn't really finesse it, where they had the feminists protesting against this company.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was wondering what that was about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you found what?
No, I also wish I found weird. I had to cough a while ago, so I do apologize.
Oh. Yeah. I was just like, I don't know. I guess the whole idea of like starting a family really should just be your own. Like that no one else, no other outside entity should be involved with it. And I think Michelle Obama said something which I really agree with when she was like, I tell the men in my life, you don't know me, so stay out of my business. And I'm like, yes, I totally agree. But it's not only men. It's interesting that the person who was in charge of Pegasus was a man, but the person who's in charge of the birthing center is a woman. I was like, okay, I see what you're doing there. But yeah, it's just like, stay out of women's business. I just feel like that should be the rule and that should be the golden standard. It's like, you don't know what's going on in my body. You don't know what I want. So just leave me alone. And I'm like, yes, I couldn't agree more. And I feel like that's probably what they're trying to say with this, is just like, whether you agree on the side of like what the birthing centers are doing or whether you agree with what's happening now, where it's like we don't believe in ending life at whatever stage, it's like, just mind your business. Like, it's not your family, it's not your kids. you don't have to be pregnant. Like, you don't have to go through this. So just butt out.
Yeah, this, I don't know. This movie, I don't know. I love the movie. Like, I know if I was married and me and my wife were ever having the option to discuss kids, I think I'd probably be on Mr. Edgeford, his side, where I'd kind of value the natural birth. But then as a black man, who I'm going to end up marrying a black woman, I'm, let's be honest, there's also a part of me that says I would probably still agree to support this whole pod thing, knowing what you said earlier, like when we talk about women dying in childbirth, like it happens to people of color at a very disproportional rate to women, to white women. So it's like, if I was in a situation, I'd be weighing the pros and the cons. Like, I want the natural birth, I want to know my kids will be fine, but then I also understand the human aspect of it, of my wife, you know, nurses and doctors might not value her as a woman or being a black woman giving birth or aspiring her the way she wants to. So it's weird. Like, if this was really real, I'd be really in like a real weird place, you know, making that decision. And I'm thankful I'm not in that place. And I'm thankful that even if I was potentially have a kid, that it wouldn't be my sole responsibility because it's not my body. But it would be one of those things I probably wrestle with in my head, that idea, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's fair. Like, I very much agreed with Chidwetel when he was talking about, like, let's not do this. What was interesting is that their roles kind of flipped, where he was kind of okay with it because he was starting to bond with the pod and the little baby in there. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And she was having a hard time with it, and not feeling like she was connecting. And that's also another thing that women go through, mothers either expecting or who have them, when they have their baby and everyone's like super excited and they don't know how to connect with the child yet. And you know what's crazy? I just saw a little clip the other week with Kit Harington when he was talking about his baby, and he was like, there's this thing in your house and it's keeping you up all night, and it's like, you're supposed to love it, but like, honestly, that takes time. And I was like, that's so true. Like, I feel like how people paint motherhood or parenting is very like, this is the greatest blessing of your life, it's such a gift, like, enjoy every little moment. And they don't like keep it real about like what that actually means. And I think that's, and again, to praise this movie a little bit, like, I think they did that very well, to just be like, it's not an automatic connection. And especially if you're having your baby in a pod, like, that's so difficult. I can only imagine.
I always find it, because like, I have friends, like, I'll watch their kids, take care of the kids, or I'll have, you know, my god siblings, and all my friends, or particularly my women friends, are like, oh dear, you're gonna be a great father. And I'm like, the only reason I'm great now, because these kids aren't mine. They gotta go back
right. They're going home.
Right. They go back to you guys when I'm done with them. So
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, you never really know what you're gonna be like until you're in the situation.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But yeah, I thought this was really good in terms of talking about a lot of these kind of more intricate situations involved in parenting overall. I feel like this would have been a great Black Mirror episode, because that's what it was giving me. It was giving me Black Mirror. And I will say, I think it probably would have done better as that, because there were some pacing issues with this movie. It felt a little long in places. And there were like pauses in dialogue that didn't feel like it flowed as well as it should have. So I feel like if this was a Black Mirror episode, this would be a bomb episode, but it's a movie. So
yeah, I feel like her dreams probably could have took a bit more of a horror aspect in along the lines of Black Mirror, you know, especially communicating her disconnect of her mentally knowing she's giving birth, but physically not having the same reaction, you know? So
yeah, her giving birth to the egg was funny though.
Yeah.
That had me dead. But lastly, I just wanted to say that I think that this was a really good film in terms of how it portrays fatherhood and the role that men have in raising children, because a lot of times you don't really see that. And in society in general, women are always taking the majority of the share of child rearing, even when they have jobs and even if they're going like back to school or something, they still have most of the responsibility to take care of the kids. And I feel like men don't have that much responsibility. And there's also not that high of an expectation of what they should be doing in that situation. So like, even if the dad is like present, kind of, for most people, they're like, oh, well, yeah, great father. So he's doing a great job. And it's like, well, is he doing a great job or is he doing the bare minimum?
Yeah.
Like, are we both kind of just doing the same thing, but just because he's a guy, he gets, I don't know, praised for that? It's a very, and it's so funny because like, as we're trying to like progress in society, that still seems to be one of the things that isn't really discussed as much. Like, I see it in the entertainment space a lot where it's like, there are so many top billed male actors and they're going off and doing these movies in different countries for months on end and they have kids and they have a wife. And I'm like, so does your partner and children just travel with you wherever you go? Like, if you're spending 16 hours a day on set, like, are you even interacting with your kids like that? Like, it's very strange about like these women just got to put their lives on hold to follow this man around as he pursues his dreams and furthers his career, and basically takes care of the kids. And then if the dad like drops off the kid at school one day, it's like, oh my God, father of the year. And it's like, I don't know how I feel about that. And I think Michael Keaton said something really cool where he said that he was an actor, obviously, when he was young, but then he stopped for a while to be a dad and be a part of his family. So it was years before he came back and started acting. And he has this great career now. But I think he was having a discussion at like one of those actors roundtable, and he was talking, and Oscar Isaac was bringing up the point of like, you know, I have small children and I still want to act and I still want to do stuff, but I also want to be there for them too. And he was like struggling with that. And Michael Keaton was just like being great and just helping him out. But like, I do find that interesting that the role, the expectations of what a mother and a father are supposed to be doing are very different. And I liked in that in this movie, Chiwetel was actually like the one who was bonding with the baby and really cared about getting it out of the city and getting it back into nature and like delivered that joint by himself from the little pod. I thought that that was a good way to talk about it, because in terms of feminism, I think there's an idea where it's just like, the future is female and like, that's it. And what we've talked about, I think we discussed it when we talked about the Barbie movie, is that like, to me, real feminism is a feminism that includes everyone and lifts everyone up. And I just feel like if men aren't involved in the conversation, then we're not going to progress. We're not going to get anywhere. So yeah, that's the end of my diatribe.
I see, like, I think you brought up Hollywood, and I think our generation more is like the most change that have happened like a short time as far as how we think about a lot of things. Cause I know like Chris Hemsworth is probably one of the big, like, he's known cause you know Thor, but he's one of those actors who's like, yeah, my kids are going to be this movie and my wife's going to be this movie, cause I'm not going to leave them for like 6 months out of a year and not see them, you know? So I applaud him for that. But I know like growing up, you know, as a guy, big fan of professional wrestling, there was a time period where all these wrestlers would not travel with their kids. Now, when I watch it now, and like they'll share backs behind the scenes, like almost all these wrestlers still are our age are traveling with their kids. Like the generation prior was like, I'm going to focus on work and see the kids when I see it. But I think now our generation, like we're trying to find an equilibrium to where we still have our independence, but still also, well, those of us who have kids are finding the way to balance them both. And they've shown it's possible, but I think it's also easier when you're a celebrity with money to do that. It's kind of harder when, you know, regular middle-class person to do that balance, but yeah.
Yep, when you got the money to get help, anything is possible. But yeah, that's true. And I feel like the whole you can have it all is a very capitalistic mentality, because I don't think you can. I think you can have things at certain times, but you can't have it all at once.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the thing that's kind of tying people down. It's like, well, I don't know what to do. Like, do I try to further my career or do I start a family? And it's like, I just think that there's a time for everything. Like, if you want to focus on your career right now, do that. Boss it out. But for women, it's different because there is a biological clock. Yeah. So it's like, that's something that you have to be conscious of, which sucks. Like, I'm sure, like, it's really hard. But also, like, you can go away and come back. It's harder. It's definitely more difficult. But you, there's, like, or if you're not coming back to that exact position, you can go and find something else that you're passionate about.
I will say one thing, though, about this movie that I loved was their apartment. Mm-hmm. I want an apartment like that so bad.
It's so pretty.
Like, you had, like, he had the greenhouse in there, but then it's, like, it's what is like hidden doors for every room. Like, oh, their apartment. Like, I want an apartment like that. Like, so bad.
That is a really nice apartment. I really enjoyed that. Like I said, the production design was on point. Like, and also the costume design. There is an English designer named Tom Brown, and the entire office, like their Emilia Clarke's office, all of them are wearing Tom Brown every single day, every time they stepped out. And I was like, oh, I'm eating this up. Like, I just loved it. Like, they really did their thing with this movie, honestly. I know, like, when you look at the reviews and stuff, it's not that great. But I thought this movie was pretty good. Like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. It's kind of like I said, her and this movie, her and dang, what's the other movie we saw with Marshall Ali where he's, like, dying of cancer and they put his...
Oh, Swan Song.
Swan Song. Like those three movies, like, they're dealing with futuristic concepts or near future concepts, but they're dealing about how humans socially interact in those settings. And it's one thought point, but three totally different directions with it, which I love so much. Yeah. So big news. WGA and the AMTP they did reach a deal. So the striking on their part has ended, and the pickets have been suspended. Of course, over the last week, they were announcing they would meet Friday and they meet this week, and it's taken 5 months, but it feels like since they got over their stalemate, it seems like based on the agreements they're reporting, that they're getting everything they asked for from the producers, which is amazing. But some strike leaders are saying to temper it back because the thing still has to be ratified by everybody. What's the strike leader say? What did she say? They're still going to, even though the writer's strikes are done, they're still going to continue to support the actors' strikes, which, if you wonder where they weren't all striking at the same locations, they were all striking at different locations, which is good. But I think the strike leader put out a statement, said, to be clear, no one is to return to work until specifically authorized by the guild. We are still striking until then, but we are, as of today, suspending their picketing. So instead, if you're able, we encourage you to join SAG-AFTRA on the picket lines this week. So yeah, it's a good thing, happy that we reached this point because, yeah.
It's a great thing. I was so excited when I heard about this, especially on Saturday when it seemed like they were really closing in on making a deal. I was like, okay, great. That's fantastic. I'm so happy for all the writers. I hope the details haven't been released about like what is actually in the contracts, but I hope that it's everything they asked for. I know everyone out there is struggling hard, like not having been back to work. So they still have to ratify it, but they also have to, they are going to meet tomorrow. When you're listening to this, it'll be Tuesday. So they'll be meeting that day to just finalize the language, and then they'll ratify it. That might take like a week or two to do that. And then once everyone agrees, like they'll ask their questions and stuff. And once everyone's on board, then the strike will officially be over. So the strike isn't done yet. Right now it's just the picketing is over, but a deal has been reached. And what I'm thinking, which I think most people are kind of understanding, is that like because the WGA and the SAG-AFTRA strikes are very similar in what they were striking about and asking for, that if one deal was able to be made, then the next thing would be kind of easier, because it's like, well, you know, we've covered most of this with one union, so we can pretty much do the same thing with the other one. And also what I heard is that they added a stipulation in there where it's like the actors have to also have a deal reached as well. Like, so the writers aren't going to write for any shows that the actors still aren't being able to perform on or shows, film, anything of that nature. So basically, I think the writers are like having the actors back and being like, listen, if we get something, you'll be able to get it through easier too. So I'm kind of hoping that that happens in quick succession. I don't know how long it's going to take for all of this stuff to come to a conclusion, because there is still work to do. The actors have not spoken to the studios or vice versa since the strike happened back in July. So I hope those talks get underway quickly and that everyone can get back to work. It's so interesting that this strike, I thought that this, like, only people like who cared about film and stuff cared. No, everyone knows what's happening here, and they're like, we can't wait for it to end. Like, I'm talking to people who like don't really watch movies and film like that, who are like, oh, when is this going to be over? And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that you were invested in this. So the fact that people like that are like, they care that this strike ends. They want their shows back. You know, we want Stranger Things. We want Severance, blah, blah, blah. Like, it just shows like what a huge impact this summer of strikes have been on all of us. Like, it's really crazy.
Yeah. Like, it's affected opening the industry side as far as movie release dates. You know, like I said before, I think part of what really pushed SAG-AFTRA, that's like I would put the producers guild or whatever on this path, was a lot like the ruling that AI can't be, like, the AI written stuff can't be copyrighted, that kind of thing. And that also led them, I think, to the path as well that AI generated actors can't be copyrighted either. You know, they can't really use the actors' likenesses because they'll get sued for that. So I think those legislations and stuff really ramped up. And I think what got them the most, and I feel so bad for Drew Barrymore, but then again, I don't, because you would think she knew better, being like, she's been, her whole family has been in the industry. She's like, she's industry for life. Her trying to push forth her talk show, I think her intentions were good, because you had crew who were outside the unions who needed the money, but then, you know, she's SAG-AFTRA, she guess she's also Writers Guild affiliated, but she's breaking those lines. And somebody was saying, had she waited a week, she probably would have been fine. But she didn't. So, like, and the only other talk show person, like, it was her and Bill Maher were the big two. But I don't think Bill Maher got as much attention because everybody, Bill Maher is a comedian, in air quotes, but he's an ass. So his people, like, his comedy can almost sleep his teeth. Be seen as him being the real person, so nobody really listens to him. But for Drew Barrymore, the person that she gives off as being bubbly, kind, and nice, that really affected her a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about Drew Barrymore for a sec, because people have very different opinions on this. I feel like she really thought that she was doing the right thing, and that's what's sad about it, is because it's like, I think her intentions were good, but she was just really misguided in terms of like what this would actually mean for the strikes and how it could hurt the WGA by not using their writers on the show. But also understanding that like she feels responsible for this entire crew and feels like, well, they're not working and I want to help them out. So I think that her heart was in the right place, but she just didn't go about it the right way. And again, it's so interesting that her show, The Talk, Bill Maher, and Jennifer Hudson, all these other people, they were like, okay, we're just going to go ahead and do it anyways. And then everyone got upset. And then as soon as Drew Barrymore said, okay, you know what, we're not going to do it, everyone reversed course. Yeah. Like every single show was just like, okay, yeah, no, we don't want it. And it's like, that is the power of public opinion and the power of like the public relations. Like, people just didn't want the bad PR. So they were like, fine, we just won't do it. And then a deal was reached. And now they can go ahead and do their show. Like, the talk shows are going to be the first things that are going to come back because, again, you don't need actors for that. Mm-hmm. So, like, if they would have just been patient, they wouldn't have even needed to do all of that. Like, but if you're already seen as a scab, that's kind of bad. So she wasn't in violation of any SAG-AFTRA rules, but she was for the WGA. So it's like,
look, girly. The hits keep on coming because one of the actors who said he didn't really understand the strike or anything, Stephen Amell, his show got canceled by Stars. So he's like, Stars announced that they were canceling 4 shows. So for all his, you know, yay, producers, I'm with you as an actor, this shit makes no sense. The writers, screw them. His show got canceled. So good job, Stephen Amell. Good job.
I hope people. Bill Maher's show gets canceled too.
Bill Maher's show should have been canceled decades ago. I don't know how he sold the show, but yeah. I just find it funny. Like, Stephen Amell was like, yeah, yay, strikes are shit. And then Star was like, nope, your show's canceled. So, funny.
That's what you get. Yeah. Okay. So that's great. We'll keep you guys updated with, you know, more of that news as it continues to roll out. In other news, though, kind of related, Martin Scorsese says to everyone, or yes, to the entire film industry, to fight back against comic book movie culture by supporting directors like Christopher Nolan, saying that we've got to save cinema. Now, if you know or don't know, he has a new movie coming out, Killers of the Flower Moon. Again, because the actors are on strike, he has to be out promoting it. So I just watched his GQ interview where he talked about all of his films, and it was so good. Like, he is just the realest one out there. Like, I don't know. It's funny when he came out with these comments years ago. I remember when he first made the comments about, oh, comic book movies are like theme park rides, basically is what he said. He wrote a whole op-ed about that, I think. And people had very violent reactions against that, including me. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, these movies mean something. I am so embarrassed. I am so embarrassed because he was right. Like, he couldn't have been more correct. He was just seeing it before everyone else saw it, I think. So I retract and recant my statements from before because that is incorrect. Like, I understand what he's saying because he kind of explained it more when he was just like, he's not saying that the people who are working on it are not talented or that these movies don't have some type of impact. He's just saying that, like, the fact that these movies exist really blocks out other movies from being seen. Movies that are original, movies that are made like Nolan's movies. I think he also mentioned the Safdie brothers and people who are making movies like that, but don't have the budget to make bigger movies because those budgets are being reserved for superhero movies and sequels and prequels. And he's so right. And I feel like, again, and I said this earlier, everything that's happening right now, the strikes, you know, all of these companies losing money. This year was really like a turning point in terms of like what the industry is going to be going forward. And I feel like right now it's at a really bad place. Like, this is the lowest it's ever been. So when you have movies like Barbie or Oppenheimer or things like that that are out there doing well by original creators, I mean, Barbie's still a... It's made by Greta Gerwig, so we give it some grace. But he's so right in terms of, like, this is like a make or break thing. Like, we actually have to push for movies that are considered indie films just because they don't have the budget to be bigger. We have to get that back into the bloodstream of what are in theaters. Because even lots of movies that I'm trying to see that are coming out at these festivals are not at my local theater. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've discussed that so many times. But we need those films. We need the diversity and the variety of those films in order to keep this industry going, or else it's just gonna be, it's not gonna become art anymore. It's just gonna become like product placement.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like Scorsese's, like, I love Martin Scorsese. I do think, you know, The Irishman was far too long, but whatever.
It was, yeah.
And casting a 7-year-old Robert De Niro as like 40 and up was like really, really mind-boggling. But his, I think his, I don't think his issues with comic book movies themselves or comic book directors, because like you mentioned, Nolan directed like,
yeah,
like kind of rebirth.
That's not what he's at, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think his comments are more directed toward the production, like the studios. That's mm-hmm. that's the issue, where the studios rather latch onto these known IPs and hope they make magic with them, and they rarely hit the way they think they're going to. Like, we've kind of mm-hmm. seen the diminishing returns of the superhero or comic book movie genre as a moment. Like, even with, you know, we've talked about the failures at Warner Brothers, not just on the comic book side, but all their properties has been so far, other than like Barbie, Oppenheimer. I don't even know which one of them produces it, but whatever. Still,
they produced Barbie.
Yeah, they produced. Okay, they produced Barbie. CineScope was mm-hmm. Oppenheimer with CineCopy, whatever.
But, yeah.
And we see it now with Disney and Marvel. Like, their movies have been diminishing returns. Like, it was always going to happen eventually, but I think these studios are still trying to bank on them. But it is what it is. That's always been Hollywood. Before, like, our parents, it was like, or before that, it was what, Cowboys and Indian stuff. Then it became Italian mobster stuff. Then it became this retro nostalgia stuff about the 70s and 80s, you know, Dirty Harry sequels, you know, the Dollars trilogy with, you know, Clint Eastwood. Hollywood always does it. They find something to latch on, and it seems like from the late 2000s to the 2010s to 2020s, it was superhero movies. But now I see they're moving beyond that. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and the thing is like, Hollywood is a business, so there's always going to be money to be made there. But I think now more than ever, with these inflated budgets for these films, and also just how much these movies are making, I think business owners and CEOs and tech bros are looking to Hollywood to say, like, okay, this is a place where we can make a lot of money, and we can just keep doing the same thing over and over again and still make and keep making profit. And I think that they just didn't understand that, like, that's not how this works. And also, this is an art form. Like, this is not whatever else y'all be doing. This isn't Wall Street. This isn't whatever is going on over there. Like, this is something different. It is a business, but it's still a creative industry. So that, and the thing is, like, you're right. This happens all the time in history. Like, they weren't making those kind of the money that Marvel makes now. They weren't making that back in the day, but you did have these uber successful movies and genre movies that were kind of taking over. And then you would have a breach in that, and someone else would come through, like Scorsese and Spielberg and, oh God, I forgot his name. My dude who did The Godfather. I can't think about it right now. Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
And all of them who kind of came up at the same time and were basically making like independent films that ends up doing huge numbers and really captivating the culture and like reinventing what movie making actually is. And the fact that Martin Scorsese was at the head of that, and he now, first of all, he's like a historian, like he knows everything.
Yeah.
But like, he also pours into young filmmakers and he like helps them get their films made. And I think that that's what needs to happen now. It's like the erasure of mid-budget movies is what has killed this entire industry. Like, it's, yeah. I mean, it's a huge part of it, along with corporate greed. But, you know, that's what needs to come back. Like, we, and this is probably the breaking point. Like, this is what is going to usher in, you know, a reinvention, I think.
In mentioning all those names, you also made a very interesting point. For a time period, like from the 80s to like early 2000s, the major IP was not comic books or whatever. It was directors. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to pay Christopher Nolan to do three Batman movies so I could do two other of his movies. You know, because we see you work with Memento. He's a main director. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. You want to do three Batman movies? Fine. But we also want you to do three regular movies. Steven Spielberg, I saw the new Spielberg picture. I saw a new Nolan movie. I saw the new Coppola movie. I saw the new Scorsese movie. The directors at one point were the major IP. And I think that's also part of the thing he's also dealing with as well. Like, he's not the commodity himself as a creative anymore. You know, so, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the model has completely changed.
Yeah. But dang, I want to, like, music is copyrighted, so I can't do it. But of course, the major news, I guess one of the major news today, other strike, is the fact that Usher will be headlining the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. He did an interview where he talked about it's amazing. Like, he's celebrating almost 30 years in industry, and to think he's been in industry that long, I'm like, that's amazing. Like, basically, I think I grew up listening to Usher, and Usher's, I think, only like 10 years older than me, which I find really weird. You spent like 30 years in the industry, and I'm like 30. I'm like 35. Mm-hmm. Dude, you're still kind of young. And he's talking about how it was amazing, you know, the fact that he's doing Super Bowl in Vegas, and he's in year two of his Vegas residency, and everything is coming full circle for him, which, you know, happy, because a lot of Black artists and entertainers rarely do get these levels of acknowledgement in the industry. Like, we saw last year with Angela Bassett, she should have won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. Should have been an Oscar. She's winning, getting an honorary one this year. Like, a lot of times Black celebrities did not get their proper due and recognition. So I'm thankful Usher is, you know, getting that. Especially, like, the only three Black artists I remember doing the halftime show. Janet did it with Usher. No, yeah, Janet did it with Justin Timberlake. But I think it was just been, now it's Usher, Beyonce, and Michael Jackson. Like, that's
no. Rihanna did it last year. This year,
I don't count that. I don't count that one. I don't count. That wasn't a show. That wasn't
okay.
A show.
So what? You're not gonna do it. You're not gonna come for Rihanna. I will end it.
All right.
I will end it right now. Rihanna performed at the Super Bowl this year, pregnant. Like, you wish you could. Like. You wish you had.
I remember your comments when it happened. Don't be revisionist now.
What did I say? I said the exact same thing. Run the tape. Run the receipt. Because I know I said the exact same thing. Like, anyway. But I do think the Super Bowl has gotten better with, like, incorporating a lot of Black acts into their shows. So, like, you had Rihanna, you had The Weeknd, you had Travis Scott. I think he did it. Yeah,
that,
you know,
wasn't Travis Scott. That Travis Scott was really Maroon 5, and that was the one here in Atlanta. And everybody wanted Outkast perform, but, like, yeah.
Oh, Travis Scott didn't. He did perform.
He did perform.
Oh, you're saying it wasn't the headline.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that they're incorporating more people. Like, when they had Dr. Dre and Mary J. Blige and Kendrick Lamar, like, they're getting better at it. Like, I feel like after the Janet Jackson situation, they were like, no more Black people. And then, like, people, and then they came around because maybe someone realized they were overreacting. But even people who were, like, singing the national anthem, like, her did it. Did Chloe and Bailey do it? No, I think that wasn't at the Super Bowl. That might have been at something else. I think
that was a regular season game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting better, and I appreciate that. I am so excited for Usher to perform. Like, the way I grew up on this man's music is crazy. Like, I have been listening to his music since I was, I don't know, 7? Like, I was mad young. That Confessions album, what? Like, he has, and that's the exciting thing about Usher, is that his catalog is so good. So I know that, like, the set list is going to be bomb when he performs. Like, I can't wait to see that, because, you know, your girl don't got money to see his Las Vegas residency, so, like, this is the closest thing that I'm gonna get to that, and I am so excited, and I'm really happy, like, he has the Vegas residency and this, like, I'm just glad that he is, like, his Renaissance era is here. Like, I'm just excited for him. Yeah. I really am, because I really do love Usher.
Yeah,
but
everybody likes Usher. I mean, the only bad thing Usher ever did in his career was, you know, introducing the world to Justin Bieber. But other than that, you know.
That wasn't a bad thing. Justin Bieber had his moments.
I mean, that Journals album is still fire, though.
Come on. He has moments. Like, we can discuss the before and the after, but Journals? That was an offering. Like, that was good. That was good. So, anyways. We always go off on tangents. Okay, let's get back to let's get back to it. What did we watch this week?
Well, I didn't have a chance to watch anything. I've been getting over a cold. My body still has these aches. So I got a lot of entertainment catching up to do. I think the next 3 or 4 days. But I didn't want to watch it. You did say on here that you watched the morning show, and I want to know about that, because when my girl Nicole was on that, and you know, I really want to watch a third season, so I want to know how you enjoyed it so far.
Yeah. Okay. So I only watched the first two because you know they don't release all the episodes at once. They release them weekly, so I'm catching up on it. I think I've missed like one episode or something. But yes, Nicole Beharie is in the show. I was so excited when I saw her there because I'm obsessed with her. Like, I really feel like she needs to be in everything. Like, I want her to be in everything because she's great. She's not playing like a main role. She is playing like a supporting role. But I need her to be in like more leading roles because she is so talented and just absolutely beautiful. And I just want all the things for her. Like, I just want all the things. But so far, it's interesting. Like, I kind of didn't know where they were going to go with it this season, but they are taking a route where it's like technology and big business, how it's like influencing, infiltrating news, making it a lot less biased or a lot less unbiased. Although I kind of think that news is always biased, but it's showing more of like what the corporate side of like how these companies are going in and taking and like actually influencing what you are watching or what you're receiving as news, which is already happening, but it's kind of scary. I like how relevant the show is. Like, it's very keeping in touch with like what is actually happening in the real world. So that's really good. Jennifer Aniston, still great. Like, the woman is just a really good actress. I don't think she gets the credit that she deserves, but I think Jennifer Aniston really be holding it down. Like, for real. And Reese Witherspoon is fine. I don't really love her in this role. And I said that from season one, but she's there and she gives us a little moment every now and again. But for me, Jennifer Aniston is really the draw.
Sorry for cutting you off.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I know that people had an issue with the show where the first season was amazing and the second season was kind of iffy. Has this third season recovered from the issues of the second season?
Yeah, I think the second season was very, it wasn't my favorite. Mm. And again, the season isn't done yet, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think the second season, because it was about COVID, mm-hmm. and we were still in COVID, it was kind of just like, yeah, nobody wants to really talk about this. Like, I get they're trying to keep in touch with like real life, but we don't want to have to rehash. We don't have to see Jennifer Aniston like sweating out on the floor because she has COVID. Like, that's just not, like, we're living that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that, we don't want to see it right now. Yeah. So I think that was the mistake that they made on that part. This season feels like it's getting better. Like, we're dealing with like an Elon Musk type of person played by John Hamm, who's kind of coming in and really shaking the tables of like what's going on in this company, and the women, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, are getting a lot more dominance. Like, they're having a lot more influence, and so it's just, we're getting there. We're dealing with some stuff that seems interesting. So I'll see how it plays out. And I also watched the fourth season of Sex Education that just came out. People had issues with the third season, and I agree with some of those issues, and I disagree in some places, but this season was dark. Like, I didn't realize how, like, intense it was going to be. Because Sex Education, it, like, balances, like, the sex and the jokes and, you know, real-life interpersonal issues pretty well. This season, they were like, we're giving you all of the drama and you just got to take it. Like, just take all of the intense emotions and just feed it into your eyeballs. And it's like, God, I felt exhausted by the end of that one. But I did almost cry like 3 times during the finale, because I think the characters have always been the bedrock of that show. Like, you just love the characters so much. So to say goodbye to them and see how they're, you know, arcs kind of wrap up. I liked the ending because it really felt like, it didn't feel like the end. It kind of just felt like you're just not gonna have this complete access to these people's lives anymore, but they're still living. Like, and I liked that And I guess that's just a testament to the writing of the characters in the show, where it's like, these feel like real kids. So like, it, you feel like they have a life outside of you watching them, or you watching the show. And I really appreciate that. It's such a great show. Like, I really, I wish I had this growing up. Like, it's just such a good show for, like, and not even just young people, like, for literally everyone, because they don't even stay on young people all the time. They go to the adults. Everyone's a part of the conversation in the show. And I think that the way that they talk about this stuff so openly, it really does demystify and destigmatize a lot of the stuff that is being talked about in society right now, or rather not being talked about. I feel like people don't actually talk about sex that much. Like, we talk about it and like it's everywhere, but do we talk about it? You know what I'm saying? Like, are we really having these conversations? A lot of times, no.
No.
Great show, great send off. Chef's kiss. Anyway, that is it from us this week. We hope that you're taking care of yourself and doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Au revoir.